You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Hello, everybody. Jacob Daniel here. Another episode of the Daniel 3 podcast. And thanks for watching or listening or however you consume the content that I provide. Doing a couple little updates and stuff. So the audio podcast format is slowly getting caught up. So if you're, you know, prefer to listen to the podcast on the audio only instead of the YouTube, I'd fallen a little bit behind there, but we're getting caught up. Should be, you know, I think by early next week, kind of back to current. Also, website, I'm sorry, is still down and out for the count at the moment, but should hopefully be back up and running sometime soon as well. As for what we got coming down the pipeline, so I'm recording this episode, so I got to think in future tense of when this will come out. April 14th, I have James Gentleman and Jose Galison of the No Way Jose podcast coming back on the show for another discussion. And then April 19th, I have, excuse me, I'm trying to hold back a sneeze and it's gone. All right. April 19th, I have Dave Smith coming on the show. And after that, I don't have anything scheduled, but we're currently talking to some people and getting them booked for stuff. So I'll try to announce the show so you can try to tune in, watch them live. Most of my shows are live. This is one of my rare times where I'm having a conversation and recording it ahead of time, just because sometimes it works out better to do that. So the guest I have today, and it's going to be one of those confusing, I don't know, I've somehow done this now like three episodes in a row where I have two people on with the same first name. So a few episodes back, I had two Calebs, and last week I had two Andrews. Well, today it's going to be two Jacobs, so we'll figure it out. Maybe I'll just relinquish Jacob for the conversation and go by Daniel, because that's what everyone calls me anyway. My guest tonight, he is the host of the Rise to Liberty podcast, where he also talks about, you know, libertarianism and sort of the times that we're living in and trying to, you know, figure out what's going on and how we can better understand the world around us, kind of, you know, push against the boundaries of allowable opinion, and, you know, talk to people and keep pushing that Overton window. I've talked to Jacob quite a few times on the Clubhouse app, and we've always had some good conversations. And so now he's coming on the show, and we're going to have a good conversation here for you guys to enjoy. So I'm going to bring him on now. Jacob, how you doing tonight?
Oh, not too bad. Just kind of hanging out, relaxing. Had a long day full of Liberty stuff at the Utah State Libertarian Convention. And so just kind of unwinding. But, you know, I'm still all jacked up on Liberty. So, you know, it's good, though.
Yeah, you know, conventions are always a blast. You know, even though the ones in my state have had a little bit more, I don't know, drama to them, you know, just the energy you get when you're with a lot of other people that share your values, and that kind of see the world the same way. It's always rejuvenating to the spirit, and helps to, you know, kind of keep up the energy for the good fight that we're trying to fight. So, you know, I wish I could attend more of them. You know, hopefully my wife's pregnant right now, so I don't want to leave her behind too much, but I'm hoping in the next couple of years to come, maybe I'll be able to do a bit more traveling and, you know, get to meet more of, there's so many people I've only talked to online, and I'd love to get to meet more of them in person. But yeah, man, it's, so, you know, this is your first time on my show. So, I'm going to give the floor over to you a little bit. Just, you know, introduce yourselves a little bit more, to my audience, your background, and then, talk a little bit about your podcast and, you know, the things that you like to talk about.
Yeah. So, of course, my name is Jacob Johnson. Really, I mean, I hate talking about myself, which is why I have a podcast. I get to talk to other people, you know? So as far as the, you know, political and liberty stuff, of course I was raised to always question things, and, even if I thought I was right, to always still question that as well. So it really kind of started off when I was really young, but then I got exposed to libertarian philosophy through Ron Paul. I actually told this story today. It was actually in a High Times magazine advertisement, the first time I ever saw his name or picture or anything. And of course, you know, a politician who was pushing for decriminalization and legalization of marijuana, I had never seen or heard of anything like that. I thought it was political suicide at that point. And so I dove into what he was saying more. And what really stuck with me was the Fed, which didn't take me long to find G. Edward Griffin. And as soon as I read The Creature from Jekyll Island, it was all uphill from there, like just the uphill battle. One thing that I really liked about it, though, Ron Paul, is it showed me that, you know, some of these principles of freedom and liberty weren't just these like outdated ideas. They were still very relevant. They were still very alive. Because, you know, I'm a product of government schooling, and anything in government schooling, they would have you believe that, you know, these principles, these ideas, they just don't have an effect on our society now. And that it's just something you read about in history books. Mm-hmm. And lie.
We tried freedom 100, 200 years ago, and, you know, it was all right, but it just didn't work out. And yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And sometimes I feel like the more, like, I was like an honor roll student, I was taking like AP classes and stuff, including AP history and stuff. And I've always kind of felt like the smarter you were in school, the more they dumbed you down. Cause it was like, you know, the more they propagandize you when you take those like higher level classes and stuff. And then, so I came out of high school very brainwashed, and because of that, I was a you know, pretty radical leftist for probably the you know, first 7 or 8 years of my adult life. But so, yeah, definitely know what you mean there. But continue with going on with what you were saying.
Yeah. I think a lot of, you know, these principles, as I learned them and dove into them, you know, I was a farmer for about 8 years while I was in high school and out of high school. Honestly, the best job I've ever had. I would still be doing it too if there was any money in it. But thanks to government subsidies and mega farms and all these things, these small family farms just can't make it anymore. And I had to move on. I couldn't support myself. But it was interesting because there was a quote that always stuck with me from Thomas Jefferson that said, those who work God's those who work the earth are God's chosen people. And it was always just interesting. And, you know, I love cooking. That's like just one of my hobbies that I just really enjoy. And being able to grow food was like a whole next level thing. It's so intimate to be able to like feed people and give people sustenance. And so it was just something that always stuck with me because of that. And, you know, working blue collar jobs mainly is just kind of reinforced a lot of these ideas for me as well. So pretty much where I'm coming from, that's pretty much where I've been. So the podcast, where I'm going, you know, it was just a hobby, something I've always wanted to do. And over the past couple of years, with just the blatant government overreach, like they're just not even hiding the abuses at this point. It was interesting because I came to this weird fork in the road where it was like the podcast market is just flooded with like libertarian or liberty-based podcasts. And I struggled with that. I almost didn't pull the plug and do it, but I just view that having these conversations are so extremely valuable. And the more conversations we have, the better it's going to be. So here I am. And I really like to focus on what everyone's doing, how we're actually pushing liberty, how we're trying to grow liberty. I really do like questioning the narrative, talking history, pretty much anything. So it's pretty broad. It's really just based on the guests that I bring on.
Sure. Yeah. You know, the thing you talked about with farming, I mean, it's funny. I actually just had before I brought you on tonight, I was talking with Joseph Eklund, who is out in Wisconsin. He's running for Region 6 rep for the LMC, but he does this thing called it's a farm matching, where he tries to get people, instead of buying from the grocery stores, match them up with people, like farmers in their local area, to buy directly. So it benefits the farmers and the people. But yeah, so we literally just had a conversation with him a little bit about the ways in which government completely screwed up the food industry and stuff. So it was funny to hear you bring that up again. Yeah. I was like, I literally just talked about this. But it's so true. I mean, it's there's so many things that government touches that, you know, people would follow their passions and do those things more, but the government's made it either unprofitable, or they've made it so that the barriers to entry are so high that people just can't do it. And you know, it only serves to further, you know, further degrade the quality of life and the freedoms that people can enjoy. So yeah, it's definitely a problem. You know, so you mentioned, you know, Ron Paul was kind of your intro into libertarianism. You know, Ron Paul, obviously, you know, although he did run in the Libertarian Party, back in the 80s, you know, he was a Republican. So, you know, why have, you know, why are you involved in the Libertarian Party instead of, you know, trying to work in the GOP or something? You know, I always like to ask people, you know, who are involved in the LP, kind of like, why, you know, I have my reasons for why I choose the LP, but I'm always curious to hear other people's reasonings for, you know, why that's a vehicle that they choose, that they're choosing to invest in.
So the short, sweet answer is because the GOP is spineless and unprincipled. Like that's a short, simple answer. It's just because ultimately I don't really see a difference between the two parties. I mean, you got the Rhinos and the Warhawks and everything, and they vote for more spending, the expansion of power. Both parties vote for the militarization of the police force, and they blame everything, or they blame all of the problems on anything and everything except for themselves. And then for some reason, the solution to all of these messed up government programs are just more government programs, and we're never getting rid of them. And I just don't see either party actually trying to solve anything. So that's just what led me to the Libertarian Party.
Sure. No, I can definitely relate to that. You know, one of the, you know, pushbacks I get a lot, be curious for what your thoughts are on this. But I know a lot of conservatives, people in my family, people in my church and stuff, who I feel like, you know, even if they're not strict libertarians, we share like 70-80% of the same values and stuff. And you know, I'm convinced if given the opportunity, I could push them a little bit closer to 90%, but it's just about finding the right way to have those conversations. But one of the criticisms I'll get is just, you know, this sort of, I guess, black-pilled sort of mentality a lot of people have, which is like, yeah, the government sucks, but, you know, it's just too much of an uphill battle to try to, you know, actual libertarianism. And we just got to kind of accept the status quo, try to make the best with what we got now. And so, you know, a lot of conservatives just continually support the GOP, not because they really believe in it, but they're just kind of like, you know, they're content to take the easy road rather than what seems like to them an insurmountable road of trying to make a third party viable, or trying to, you know, find some way to, you know, defend liberty outside the, you know, I would argue the Republican Party's done little to nothing to defend liberty, but I suppose their argument is, you know, the GOP is at least not as destructive as the Democratic Party, which, you know, let's say for sake of argument, let's say we grant that and say, you know, well, I think Michael Malice, or I don't know if it's Michael Malice or Scott Horton. Sometimes it's like you listen to all these guys talking and you're like, you'll mix up who said what. One of them said something along the lines of like, you know, Republicans are just socialists driving the speed limit, I guess. So, you know, but insofar as, so it's like, you know, but yeah, let's say, you know, people are just, you know, I guess the question is, people, how do you convince people that it's better to go for this, you know, this road in the LP and the road for, you know, actually trying to, you know, fight for actual liberty, and instead of taking, I guess, what would be the easy way out, which is like, well, let's vote for the lesser of two evils. You know, what do you say to people who have that kind of mentality?
Well, I mean, it kind of depends on exactly who is talking to me and why, exactly what we're talking about. Because I've heard the lesser of two evils argument quite a bit. So if somebody says that to me, I simply point out that even if you're voting for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil. That's just how it is. As far as the attitude of, well, you're not winning elections, or it's too much of a uphill battle or anything, I simply point out, well, with that attitude, yes, because that's what everyone thinks. And so even if just one person comes over, that's one, it makes that uphill battle just that much or not as difficult. And so the more you can spread that, the easier it's going to become, because that's everyone's attitude. Well, you're just not doing anything. The reason I stick by the LP is because at least I know I'm principled. You know, I don't expect us to win presidential elections. Even if we did, I don't know exactly what we would do. The idea of a libertarian president is kind of against the philosophy in many ways. So luckily right now here in the state of Utah, the Republican Party, the Utah GOP is really, really making its members unhappy. There was a recent, I guess, expose from Tucker Carlson about our governor, Spencer Cox. And it was interesting. Governor Cox, he is a Democrat in Republican clothing, and that's just how it is. And it's interesting because we're such a deeply red state. And right now I absolutely love that the GOP is still backing this governor. Also, we have Mitt Romney, which, you know, yeah, that's a whole other discussion. But right now I've been pointing out to some of the local Republicans the fact that they're upset with our governor, which I am too. But I point out that he still is a party-backed candidate. They still stand behind him. We just had our county Republican convention and our governor was a speaker. So it was really interesting. So I point out the fact that their party is the one backing this person that nobody likes, apparently. And that seems to be a problem. So, and that hasn't changed. We also have Mitt Romney. He's still backed. And so I simply ask, is this a problem to you? And if it is, why? And then what are you going to do about it? Are you going to try and change the party? Because it doesn't seem like you're doing much to change the party. And if it really is that big of an issue, then you need to look at other options, more principled political options. And there are plenty here in the state. So.
Yeah, no, I hear that. And, you know, I certainly hear what you're saying as far as, you know, the, I'm trying to remember exactly the words you used. So people will say that, you know, it's an uphill battle. So why bother? It's like, well, yeah, if that's your attitude and if everybody has that attitude, then nothing will change. But, you know, there's something, at least me, I know I can't live that pessimistically. And I also just think that that's sort of the trap that the state wants us to be in, that kind of, you know, just being complacent and accepting our fate rather than realizing that really we have the power, you know what I mean? And I love that slogan that Spike uses, right? You are the power. It's like, and it's so true. Yeah. It's like we actually, you know, we outnumber, you know, the entire government, you know, not just the federal government, but the state governments and, you know, everyone who's involved in it, you know, they only technically have power that we allow them to have. And it doesn't even take convincing half the country to opt to stand up. Like, really, if you hit, what I tell people is, like, if you hit 5 to 10% and you're a 10% voting block that's just saying no, you know, that alone has a major impact on the state's ability to you know, continue in the authoritarian patterns that it's currently engaging in. So it's like, you know, you can live in complacency with the lot that you have, or you can, you know, I don't know. I guess there's just some people, I think they're just so, and the state does a good job of incentivizing this. You know what I mean? It's like, keep people, you know, entertained and well fed. Well, yeah. But the problem is, well fed isn't as well fed. You know what I mean? Like, people were well fed in 2019. here in 2022, it's not as, you know, people aren't quite as well fed as they were. So that's starting to cause a little bit of unrest. Do you think that, you know, I mean, what are your thoughts on, you know, I think that we have a unique opportunity post, you know, all these lockdowns and the way the economy is continuing to crumble, spending is still rampant. I mean, inflation, you know, continuing to go up, food shortages, you know, the thought of another major war on the horizon. I mean, there's a lot of things going on all at once right now. And, you know, I mean, I believe that, you know, although certainly all those problems are things I'm concerned about, I think that there's a real opportunity if the Libertarian Party can just get its shit together for a little bit and start, you know, just putting out a coherent message from competent candidates that just, you know, highlight that, you know, all the Democrats and the Republicans and the ways in which that they continue this, you know, all of these same policies, they've created this mess. And if we do these things, that we would actually, you know, get back to a place where, you know, you're not worrying about, can I leave my home? And you're not worrying about, is there going to be, you know, food at the grocery store? And is, you know, is World War III going to happen? You know what I mean? It's just, you know, I think we're facing a pivotal crossroads in American history right now, especially, you know, where people are going to be, especially like paying attention to people who are outside of the mainstream.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if at any point in time, now is the time for the Libertarian Party. The only way that can happen is if everyone works together. For the longest time, you know, I didn't want people to leave the party. I still don't want people to leave the party. However, if people can't get over whatever personal petty bullshit that they have, sorry, didn't mean to swear. But
it's all right.
Any personal beefs that they have, what's more important right now? Is it really important to really hold on to a lot of these personal grudges, or are you willing to set some of this aside so we can all work together to fight a bigger, much more powerful enemy who is going to take all of us out if we don't do something about it? We are lucky. We have been given this opportunity, this terrible, I don't want to keep calling it an opportunity, but if at any point in time that the Libertarian Party could succeed, it's now. We have the ideas. We don't have, not all of our messengers are the best. However, we do have great messengers. And something Dave Smith said that I really liked is that you can pretty much be as radical as you want in your messaging as long as you're telling the truth.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best things ever. And so I actually decided to run for office here in the state of Utah, running for House of Representatives, District 9. And one thing that kind of stuck out to me is all of these campaign signs that you see, they're all the same, red, white, and blue. The name changes, the designs and the flow, they all stay the same. They're always grouped together on the side of the road. You pass them all the time and you never remember them. So I've got some signs that I'm putting up, and they're black signs with big, bold yellow lettering that just say anti-war. Just blatant, out in the open. It's different, and it will be remembered. It's just, if we don't do it now, then it's never going to happen, and we're going to have to ride this train all the way to the bottom. And that's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, if not now, when? It's like, yeah. There's never going to be a perfect opportunity, but, I mean, this is the best, you know, I mean, I think the present now is always the best time to start trying to, you know, change. You know, I was making the same arguments, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. That's just like, you know, it's, you know, because it's easy to, for some people to fall into the trap of like I know my father is a libertarian in spirit, but he voted for Trump in 2020 because he was like, you know, like I agree with libertarians, but you know, this election is just so important because we can't let Joe Biden win. You know what I mean? And I was just like, but every election's like that. You're always going to be in a position where you're like, oh, well, I would vote for liberty, but you know, I got to stop the more evil person from winning, even though it's like, I fail to see what would be different if, you know, if Trump was in office right now. I'm not saying it'd be exactly the same, but how would it be drastically better? Like, yeah. It just seems to me we'd be in, you know, I mean, the massive food shortages that we're facing, the economic collapse that's on the horizon, and, you know, the conflict with Russia and Ukraine, like, you know, how does Trump fix any of this? Like, he doesn't. So to me, it's just people falling into that trap. And I mean, the other thing you said was, you know, people within the Libertarian Party who, you know, you don't want people to leave, but if they can't get over, you know, petty drama, then get out of the way and let the adults, you know, have the table and get things done. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I mean, there's just so many people who are caught up in, it's like one thing after another, but it's like, you know, X person said mean thing on Twitter, or X person did something 20 years ago that I don't approve of. And I'm like, why is this your focus? Like, I'm losing patience for some of these people. Because I just think that, like, if you don't have a sense of urgency about what's going on in the world right now, that you can't drop the, you know, some of the, because to be fair, like, it's not even that sometimes the things that people complain about are maybe absolutely nothing. Like, I might be able to, you know, sometimes go, okay, yeah, maybe that person shouldn't have said that, or yeah, maybe this thing here is a little bit weird, but like, I don't know, just have some proper, like, I don't know, situational awareness. It's kind of like if you're stuck in a, you know, in a foxhole, and, you know, gunfire going on above your head, and the person you're stuck in the foxhole with, like, you know, I don't know, like, set of, you know, you were like, you know, it's like you're under fire, and instead of, like, you know, they're asking for the ammo to put in their gun so they can return fire. And instead of giving the ammo, you go, I can't work with you because 5 years ago you said this racist thing.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, like, why does that matter right now? Like, yeah. You know, like, you know, maybe if we get to the other side of this and we win and we actually have liberty, it's like, you know, maybe I'll be more incentivized to care about, you know, some of these things. But right now, like,
yeah,
I mean, I just feel like, you know, what was that? I forget who made the little, it wasn't a flag. It was like a little cartoon, back during the American Revolution, where they had like the snake cut up into like the 13 different colonies. Oh, yeah. And it was like unite or die. Like, yeah, that's where we're, yeah, join or die. Like, that's where we're at right now. It's like, we either join together to fight the state, to fight authoritarianism, or, you know, you'll be clutching your pearls about the offensive things that people said on Twitter all the way to the gulag. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, and I'm sorry, like, if people cannot get over those things, then I just, you know, I'm going to move on.
Yeah. So there's two things that have kind of like come to light for me. One thing, I didn't realize that when I was signing up for the Libertarian Party, that we were all expected to be perfect and to have never made a mistake. and to never have a bad idea or to ever make a mistake in the future. I didn't realize that. And I also didn't realize that any human mistake that I made was going to be held against me as if it was some war crime.
Yeah. Or associations that you have.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you talk to this person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that really frustrates me. And it's like, it's one thing if somebody kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. Well, okay. But if it happens, it happens. And that leads me to the other thing that really frustrates me is that I have no problem with criticism or any bad take being criticized. What I always ask myself, why is this person criticizing? Well, there's one of two ways or one of two reasons. And it's either to tear that person down or you're criticizing them to make sure that they get a better take. Are you building them up or tearing them down? And most of the criticism I see now is just tearing people down. And it's like, if it's a bad take, explain why it's a bad take so they can have a better take. Let's all help each other be better and more principled, not tear each other down because we're not as principled as the next.
Oh yeah. I mean, 100% agree with that. Like, I remember a lot of the outrage that happened last year at maybe like at some of the messaging that was coming out of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. And some of the criticisms I agreed with. There were some tweets and some of the messages that I found to be, you know, a good balance of edgy and truth, and I thought they were handled well. And then others that I thought, like, yeah, you know, that's not something I would say, because I think it actually is more harmful than beneficial. But my reaction was basically just like, okay, I don't like it, but like, it's not the end of the world. And if anything, I'm just going to talk to these people privately and have a conversation with them. But instead, a lot of people just decided to, you know, be outraged and offended. And, you know, that led to, of course, the attempted coup and taking of the New Hampshire party and all the drama that happened after that. And, you know, and I was just like, you know, this isn't how adults handle problems. You know, it's just not. Honestly, all it took was I had Jeremy Kaufman on my podcast and basically said, hey, man, these tweets, I like them. These tweets, I don't know. Let's talk about them. And he was kind of like, yeah, I'm not batting 1,000. Like, you know, there's things that I put out there that are I will defend, and other ones that I'll agree that, yeah, you know, in hindsight, you know, I'll learn from them and do better. And it's just like, okay, like, you know, like, I mean, what else can you expect from people other than just to be open to criticism? But they're not going to be open to criticism if you're just immediately attacking them and blackballing them and calling them names and stuff. Like, that's just, I don't know. Like, I didn't think we were in middle school anymore, but for some people, it's like they emotionally didn't mature past that point, and that's the only way they know how to solve problems. So I don't know. It's, you know, fortunately, I don't think that constitutes a majority of the party. What I found is that really the quote unquote factionalism and, you know, there's, you know, people, it's like the Mises caucus and the non-Mises caucus people. And it's like, I don't even view it that way. Like, because for the most part, I think there's a lot of people who aren't even part of the Mises caucus who have no problem working alongside the caucus and members of the caucus and, you know, really have been right there alongside the caucus whenever, like, a lot of these dumb drama things have happened. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. Like I see a lot more of people actually getting along and working well together. And just, there's like, you know, a couple dozen or so bad actors that just like to sow division and cause drama. And, you know, I think we just got to move on from those people and focus on, you know, continuing to grow and, you know, continuing to, you know, push the Libertarian Party in the direction that we think it needs to go in. I mean, I, you know, again, I can't stress how you know, this is, you know, I think an opportunity, you know, coming up in 2024, that if we get the right candidate, and, you know, really any of the three that I think are the most likely to get that place, I'm okay with, whether it's Dave Smith, whether it's Spike Cohen, whether it's Justin Amash, like, you know, all three of them would do a great job. But we got to make sure that, you know, not just that we get one of those guys and they run a good campaign, but, and then we have a good vice presidential candidate behind them, but we got to do better on the state level and at the local level. And the LP, as far as I can tell, has done nothing at the local level, you know, over the past couple decades. And to me, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think, you know, as much as running a good national campaign matters, I think we need to do even more work at the local level to get people involved in their communities and start pushing people more towards, you know, a kind of a view of local sovereignty and self-governance. Because to me, that's the only way to ward off and be ready for the hard times that are coming up.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, ideally, a well-run libertarian presidential campaign is really just an outreach program. Like, we're trying to just spread the message to as many people as humanly possible. And personally, this is the idea I've been tossing around for a while. I don't see it happening. However, I would love to see a Spike Cohen and Dave Smith ticket. I don't care who's on, who's vice or whatever. It doesn't matter. I think they're the two best messengers for this time period, and both for different reasons. I mean, Dave has the reach of media unlike any other libertarian up to this point. And Spike, I mean, he could, you know, sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves. Like, it's ridiculous. And I just think that would work out the best just because of how great they are for entirely different reasons. And it would benefit the party by bringing the most people in. Like I said, I don't see that happening, but, you know, I'll live in my fantasy. As far as focusing locally, that should be the focus. One of the biggest tenets of our belief is, you know, states' rights. We shouldn't have a lot of this bloated government bureaucracy. So why aren't we focusing on the more state or state runs, or, you know, the smaller county runs, county commissioners, or pretty much just any county level position, city council meeting or city council positions? I don't understand why we're not putting our resources there in runs that we know, or runs that have a more likely chance of us actually winning. If a candidate has, you know, $10,000 in their war chest, but the incumbent has $140,000, probably not likely. But right, if you can compare to the incumbent, then let's put the effort behind that. So,
yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, one of the things, so, like, you know, what you talked about, like what you do on your podcast and something you mentioned earlier, and this has been something I've been kind of, I wouldn't say struggling with, but I've been trying to wrestle with this a little bit and come up with a good answer for it. But, you know, there's some libertarians who have sort of, like, almost like given up hope or something. And, you know, I don't know how much you pay attention to the Twitterverse, but there's, like, you know, people who are calling themselves post-libertarians and,
yeah,
and saying,
interesting that, movement.
Yeah. And saying that, you know, kind of like undermining the importance of being principled. And again, and I want to be careful because I actually like some of the people who would be under that label. And it's not that every single person in that label has the same, you know, viewpoints or says the same thing. But some of them certainly, I think, have sort of had a sort of scornful view on being principled, which is something you said earlier. It's like, you know, you're like, you know, at least I'm principled. And it's like, I hear that. And but then it's like, I'm trying to come... I've been trying to come up with the best arguments for why being principled matters, because it's something that seems intuitively true to me, but it can be sometimes hard to convince people of. I mean, my I guess like initial thoughts are that it's kind of a matter of time preference, because like it's easy to sacrifice your principles in the short term to maybe gain some temporary victories. But I think anything that you do in the short term through sacrificing your principles is going to blow up in your face in the long run. But I don't know. I mean, do you think it's just that, or do you think there's something, you know, something more to that? Like why is it, you know, when we're fighting the tyranny that we're fighting, you know, why isn't it win at whatever costs? Why is sticking to our principles important in your view?
So first and foremost, I agree with the black pill side of the post-libertarian viewpoint, is that we are facing an enemy whose hunger for control and power is just that hunger will never be met. And so the direness of the situation, I fully agree with that. And that's why I'm doubling down on the LP. I don't have another choice as far as my opinion. So to address the direct question is, I mean, it's important to me, and I believe for everyone, to stand by their principles, because for one, I believe in objective truth. It's wrong to steal and murder and cause harm to other people. And in any part of the world, doesn't matter what culture you were born into, doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter what generation you were born into, what's wrong is wrong, what's right is right. What's right is, of course, a little bit more cloudy. However, what is wrong is very clearly defined across the world. It's a universal language. I believe sticking by your principles is important for one, because of your trustworthiness, for one. If you're willing to bend on your principles when you pretty much have your back against the wall, when you have all the power in the world, why wouldn't you go against your principles then? I mean, the example I can use is that, so I'm actually chair of my county affiliate here in Weber County, and our county convention had just passed, and a very low turnout. It was really disappointing, actually, but pretty much we had five people, right? And which is weird. Some meetings will be just like that, five people, then the next will have 15, 20. And I don't know, it's really unpredictable. However, we could have pretty much just not followed any of the rules right then and there and just said whatever we wanted. I could have typed up whatever report, you know, with my secretary, and it would have just been whatever. But if we didn't follow the rules then, when nobody else would have known, then none of those rules would have mattered once we had more people. And at that point, why are we even doing it? So it just really, to me, I view, so it's not what you do when everyone's looking at you, it's what you do when you're alone and nobody's looking at you. And that's why I think it's important to stand by your principles no matter what.
Yeah, I think the reason why that matters is because, like, you will, if you can't prove yourself worthy through your integrity of handling a little bit of power, then, you know, if we're going to convince people to go away from voting Republican or voting Democrat, they have to see that we are different. And if we're just giving them more of the same, but it's just like, you know, instead of authoritarian flavor one and authoritarian flavor two, we're just authoritarian flavor three, it's not going to compel people. It's not going to reach people. But if we're going to reach people, and especially if we're going to reach, like, you know, there's a sort of biblical idea of like reaching the remnant. And I think that often applies to, you know, the liberty activism too, which is like we are trying to reach, you know, project a message to everybody. But I think in a way what we're first trying to do primarily is to reach the people who are the most reachable, you know what I mean? Which is still a very sizable part of the country, I think. But if we're going to reach them, like, we have to reach them by inspiring them through both our message and our actions. And if we're not consistent, then, you know, they're not gonna buy. They're not gonna leave. Because I mean, that's all we have. Like, we don't have power. We don't have resources. So it's like, if we're gonna convince people to come to the LP, our one selling point is that we have integrity, and we will always tell the truth. If we give that up, then we give up what makes us libertarians in the first place. So, and furthermore, I like the way that Dave Smith put it when he addressed this, which is like, the problem with, like, kind of like the ends justify the means approach is that you can make these hypothetical situations in your head where it makes sense to say ends justify the means, but how it usually plays out in reality is that your means become your ends. And there's almost no way to escape that. So if you're trying to use unlibertarian means to achieve libertarian ends, I mean, you know, that to me sort of breaks causality. It's kind of like saying, like, I'm going to use a torch to freeze water. Yeah. Or like I'm going to use a drill to fill a gap. It's like, you know what I mean? Like that doesn't work. That doesn't actually logically follow, you know, the tactics you're using will not bring about the end result you want. So, you know, I agree with what you're saying. And I think that that's important. And I agree with also what you said. Like, I, you know, if there's anything we can, you know, so somebody asked Dave at the Pennsylvania convention earlier, so beginning of March, if there was anything we had to learn from the post-libertarian people. And Dave didn't really have a, you know, I love Dave. I don't think he really had a good answer for that question. I don't think he was really expecting it. But I think what we can learn from them is at least to take seriously that sort of urgency to, like, you know, be very hyper aware of how evil our enemy is, and to make sure that while we remain principled, that we don't live in Ancapistan in our head. You know what I mean? Like, we have to we need to make sure that we contend with reality while also staying true to our principles. And that definitely is, you know, in a Christian sense, you know, I think of what Jesus said, like, wide is the gate that leads to destruction, but narrow is the one that leads to life. That's certainly the narrow path to walk, to be principled and deal with reality, but I think it is the right one to walk. So, you know, maybe the last thing we can talk about here, because I don't think you and I have really, you know, we've talked politics on Clubhouse before, and we've talked about it a good bit here, but you know, what are your, you know, if you don't have any, that's fine. We can punt the question, but what are your religious or spiritual, you know, views, if you have any, and, you know, and if you do, you know, do they have any impact or influence on your political philosophy?
So I've had quite the journey. I would say, I was raised, Mormon, Utah. You know, it's, so
yeah, It was shocking.
Yeah, right. Oh no. But you know, I had experienced something interesting. I won't repeat what I was told because of the language that was used. But I had been, I think I was 12 or 13. I was growing my hair out, you know, being young and rebellious, I guess, if that's rebellion, whatever, you know. And a elderly member of the church that I was attending at the time had made a comment, a very derogatory term for, you know, the homosexual persuasion. And I was like, because I have long hair, like, you worship a guy with long hair. And so that I stopped going to church. It just made me question everything. And then I wasn't religious for a long time. I kind of fell into around like out of high school. I read the Satanic Bible, and at the time it sounded great. A lot of, you know, there's some crossover with libertarian philosophy. As I got older, I realized that the whole selfishness of that whole belief system, which is just, I look at it now, and I mean, of course, there's some things that I still agree with, like, don't hit kids, you know, like, that's, but that's not necessarily their belief, you know. That's also Anton LaVey, you know, he was a interesting person. If anyone doesn't know anything about him, he was basically a con artist. So, you know, it's, he knew how to sell books. He knew how to create psychodrama, and he was raised in a circus family. So he was a showman. And that's pretty much what the whole belief system is based off of. So, you know, it is what it is. So as I've gotten older, I was definitely drawn in by Taoism. And that really, to me, showed me how to live in the now. The one issue I had with Christianity for a long time was I didn't want to be focused on the afterlife in many aspects. I didn't want to live my life now focusing on what I'm going to get later, where, because life is such a gift now. Obviously, I have a different opinion now. However, I do still follow the, you know, the teachings of the Tao. And I do implore pretty much anyone to read it, because it's more of a philosophy, not necessarily a religion.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Jordan Peterson often connects Taoism to Christianity, I think, when he's doing his lectures and stuff. Because I think it was the, I'm not very good on other religions, but I think Taoism is the one where they have the sort of like the yin yang, like the like order and chaos, that dichotomy, which I think, you know, I think that can overlay with a sort of, you know, biblical philosophy as well. And yeah, you know, that's an interesting critique, which I actually share of Christianity, you know, definitely. Well, I think it's just all over the place, whether it's Catholicism, whether it's the evangelical, you know, Protestantism. There's this focus on the afterlife that, although on one hand, I think, you know, I can make a libertarian argument for that because it kind of pertains to like a low time preference mentality. So there's something good there about that, but then it can create maybe too low of a time preference where it's like, mm-hmm. nothing I do matters right now, because, you know, or nothing I do matters, and let, like, the only thing that matters is the afterlife. So the only, it, like, only the things that I do here only matter for the afterlife. They don't matter for what happens here, which I think is a misunderstanding. Like, when people, you know, whether they're doing that consciously or if that's just something that people implicitly have, you know, through the centuries, you know, come to act out, I do think is a misunderstanding of the teachings in the Bible on on the afterlife, because I do think there is a major emphasis by Jesus himself on the importance of what we do here. I mean, Jesus said, you know, that which you do to the least of these, you've done unto me. The other thing, this comes up in the book of James, but the idea of faith without works is dead. So, I mean, there's definitely, I think there is, you know, a balance there to be achieved. It's not all about the here and now, but it's also not all about what comes next. You know, that probably plays a little bit into Taoism too, right? You know, like, you know, you have to have a foot in order and a foot in chaos. And, you know, I think that's the way that Christians should try to approach it. Like, you need to have a foot, and this is be in the world, but not of it, right? That's the same thing. Like, you know, have one foot in the world, have one foot planted in the idea of eternity, but try to exist in both and try to, integrate both into your, you know, into your being. Is what I think that's the kind of right balance to try to achieve, at least.
Yeah. I definitely agree. It's, to me, it is all about balance. And I mean, that's the tightrope walk that we all deal with, you know, the balance of family and work and, whatever our extracurricular activities are, plus hobbies and, you know, trying to find time to read a book is almost impossible, but if you can read a couple of pages, do it.
I've read a couple of pages of like a dozen books in the last month, and I never have time to finish them.
But, yeah, that's my problem. I have a stack of like 20 books I still haven't finished. So to round out like where I'm at now, I've experienced some things to where I definitely believe in a soul. And it's actually the experience I've had being around methamphetamine users, actually. And it's because I've known people before they use drugs and then after. And there's just that spark in their eye, that little sparkle, it's just gone.
Dude. Yeah, that's so, I hate to interrupt you, but like, that is so, like, I went through that. I was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult. And so I started trying different medications to kind of help with that, because I was having a hard time kind of like finding a good work home balance, and also like being focused and productive at work. Because I tend to be kind of disorganized, and it was hard for me to focus. So, you know, I tried different, you know, medications, and yeah, I remember being on the medication and was being more productive, and I had more, I guess, like energy to do things in a sense, but I did not like the way I felt on them. And I had a hard time explaining that to like my spouse and to my doctor. And then like what I eventually realized, I was like, I feel like my soul is dead when I'm on these drugs. It's like, I'm not even myself, and I'm not inside of myself acting when I'm on those medications. I'm like outside of myself looking in, watching what I'm doing play out like it's a video game.
Yeah.
And it becomes very it's like, I don't feel like a properly oriented, properly integrated human being anymore. I definitely have experienced what you're describing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, there's just, you know, I have family that are drug abusers, and, you know, I've had some friends or people I know, I won't call them friends necessarily, but, and it's just, I've seen before and after, and it's really convinced me that there is a soul. As I've paid more attention to the world, I came to the realization that there is without a doubt empirical evil in the world. Not everything that people say is evil is actually evil, but there is undoubtedly evil in the world, and it's probably showing its face more. I have this argument with some of my family every now and then that there's more evil or less evil, and I don't think there's more or less. I think it's always the same amount. It's just more prevalent because everyone's noticing. And because of that, I have come to the conclusion that, well, if there's the evil, then there has to be the other side to that. I definitely see the importance of Christianity, especially in the West, in Western civilization, as the basis of what makes it so great. I know there's something, I don't know what. So, you know, that's pretty much where I am now. You know, if it seems to me that if Satan himself was going to target anything and have the best outcome for destroying all good in the world, his number one target would be the churches. And
yeah,
and it's incredibly sad, but I think that's why there's a lot of bad things that come out of the churches, which it's not the belief. It's not the followers necessarily. It's not anything. It's the abuse of these systems.
Yeah. Well, there's like an institutional corruption or like a brokenness. That could be, you know, we're near the end here, but that could be a whole, it would take a whole podcast to break down all the ways in which the church, you know, and it's in all phases, whether it's Catholicism or Protestantism,
Mormonism.
they all have their elements of institutional corruption and scriptural abuse, which kind of go hand in hand usually, which, you know, and I don't know the solution to that. Some people have this solution to be like, oh, well, my Christianity will just be me and God. And I'm like, yeah, but I do think there is an importance to that corporate element. Yeah. You know what I mean? Kind of like same with like, you know, I don't know if you've been to like the libertarian conventions, and if you've ever been to any of the Mises Caucus events, like, you know, there's something about the gathering of like-minded people that has a special essence to it. And there's something about doing that in the church with fellow believers that has, I think that it's important to our spiritual life. But yeah, it's something that the church is going to have to deal with, and Christians are going to have to find a way to rescue the baby from the bathwater and reform the church. You know, my theory is the problem with the church is, unfortunately, because for centuries, I mean, really millennia, the church and the state were the same thing in the West. We got to separation of church and state, which I think has mostly been good. Not all good, but mostly. But the problem is, in the same way that when the Israelites were rescued from Egypt, but God said that, like, I took you out of Egypt, but now I got to take the Egypt out of you because you have all this paganism and you know, Egyptian culture and rebellion and evil still kind of embedded in your nature. The church has left the state, but the state hasn't left the church, because the church structure is still very much a holdover from the centuries of those two entities being the same. So there's too much statism in the way that the church is constructed, and we have to reform it. I don't know how, but you know what I mean? And I'm still working that out. But it's work that has to be done. It's like we almost need a second reformation.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if anybody wants to hold a Bible study somewhere out on a hiking trail where we can be in nature or whatever, because that always seems to be where, you know, a lot of these religious paintings happen anyways, then I'll come. I'll definitely sit in on that, because I don't know. I agree with the communal aspect of it. There's just something that can't be replaced when you do it by yourself. It doesn't matter how large or small the group is, but that definitely needs to be explored and be pushed out. And also, if you're going to hold Bible study, let's do it outside when it's nice and warm, you know? Like,
yeah, forget these. And it's such a, like, I get so mad when like these big mega churches and what the giant waste of resources they are. It's like, I could go a whole hour on ranting about my issues with the church. Well, we're at the end here, man. But that's a great conversation. You know, I appreciate your heart, both on the libertarian stuff and on your, you know, sharing your spiritual and religious journey there. And, I'm excited that you're part of this movement, that your voice is out there. And, I hope that, you know, it continues to grow in its reach, and that, you know, we can all work together to kind of, you know, have these conversations and move that Overton window in the right direction. So, before we hop off here, tell my audience, you know, where they can find you, your podcast and stuff, listen to you, and, you know, any social media plugs if you're, you know, active on social media.
Yeah. So the best way to find pretty much everywhere I am is risetoliberty.com/links. I found this really cool service called libertylinks.io, and it's kind of like Linktree, but it's a lot cooler in my opinion. Plus the name, you know, Liberty Links, but risetoliberty.com, risetoliberty.store for a couple of t-shirts, have some funny stuff over there. We're going to be revamping that here in the next little bit. Social media, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Telegram are the three places I tend to be as far as watching or listening to the show. Of course, all major audio platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you can think. Videos, YouTube, Rumble, and DLive are the places you can find me. And it's just Rise to Liberty or Rise to Liberty Podcast, and you can pretty much find me anywhere.
Awesome. Well, Jacob, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. And we'll definitely do this again sometime. And thanks everybody for tuning in and watching. And remember, until next time, don't fear the fire.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.